All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangouts. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate here at Google in Switzerland. And part of what we do are these office hour hangouts where people can join in and ask their questions around their website and web search. Looks like a bunch of things have already been submitted on YouTube. Lots of long questions too. So we'll see how far we get there. But as always, I think it's nice to start off with some live questions. I think Z, you were first, but somehow it dropped down.
Okay, so I tried again. I did it again, as you said.
No problem. Go for it.
Okay, so I'm first still. So I recently built a new Chrome extension, and I'm waiting for it to be indexed, and hopefully people can find it. The extension has a landing page on the Chrome Web Store, which is the page where user click a button to install the extension to Chrome. And on that page, it also has the name and description of the extension, which was submitted by me. And I don't otherwise control other parts of that page, just name and description. But I think it's good enough for me, and I don't need anything else. So that page has an URL, and it can rank. Meanwhile, I also created a dedicated website pointing to it. Let's say my Chrome extension is called ABCD, then I also created abcd.com, which shows very similar content as the store page. It says ABCD is a Chrome extension that can do this and this for you. If you want to try it out, click this link to install. And that link, of course, links back to the store page. And that's all for this entire domain. It just does this one thing. And I didn't create this domain because I need to show additional content. I just created it because I thought maybe it could rank better. The goal is to have either one of these two URLs show up in search. I don't care which one. So first of all, I want to ask you, based on the setup, which one of these two URLs do you think is going to rank better?
I think it's impossible to say for the long run, because it depends quite a bit on how it's kind of interconnected with the rest of the web. And kind of like I imagine in the beginning, it might be easier for your own domain to be visible in search, just because you have a little bit more control over that. You can define exactly what you want to have presented. You can submit that to Google to be indexed directly. In the long run, I don't know.
Is Google going to look at the domain and think this seems to be only pointing to the store page, so the store page might be more canonical?
No.
Or is it going to think that the Chrome Web Store is the more trustworthy domain to begin with?
I don't think there's any kind of automatic bias in that regard there.
Even if it's a fresh new domain, it's not going to be discriminated.
Well, I mean, it's a new extension too, so it's like I don't think we have anything where we're like, well, if it's hosted in the Chrome extension store, then it automatically shows up in search. I think that would be something that we'd be explicitly try to avoid happening.
Okay. So. Now I have two URLs. I have an issue with backlinks, so I may create my own backlinks, and maybe I want to post it to some places to say that, hey, I built this new thing and check it out, and I need to pick one of these two. And I think if I know which one is going to do better in the future, I would backlink the winner right now, because I want the winner to win more, but I don't know. But one of my thoughts is that I can't control how other people in the future, maybe my users, find it useful and they create backlinks, and maybe half of them will link to one, they'll have a link to the other. That's splitting my backlink power, and that's waste. Might as well delete one of them and force everybody to backlink to one.
So I think first of all, you need to be careful when you're going and creating links for your own sites. I would double check the webmaster guidelines with regards to which ways would be acceptable and which ways would not be acceptable. But I think in the future, it's definitely a situation where you can't control how other people are linking to your site, and they might link to the extension directly or to your site.
Exactly.
And that's not really something that you can drive directly, but you can help to influence that by choosing what kind of content you put on your website. Because your website specifically is something where you have full control over that, where you could put background information or information about you as a developer, whatever you want, kind of extra information there. And sometimes that extra information means that this is a better place for people to link to, because it's like, here is about, I don't know, almost like the company that is making this extension. And obviously, some people will also link directly to the extension and say, it's like, just click here.
Do you think that's because some people will always link directly to the store? Do you think that's splitting my precious backlinks? And
I think it does split kind of the value from the links, but the advantage of having two places that could be visible in search results, I think that's quite high. And also the advantage of having one place that you fully control, I think that is super important. And that's something where it's like you control the URLs, you control the full content that is shown there. That gives you a lot more flexibility to kind of evolve over time, where maybe you say, I don't know, next year you make a Firefox extension that does the same thing, or I don't know, like whatever other browsers or other systems that might be relevant, you can create more things. And that continues to grow within your website, whereas the Chrome extension side, well, that could just be like one part out of many in the end. And if you only focus on that, then suddenly you have all of these small islands, like the individual extensions or the individual other things that you work on. Okay. So kind of, I think having one clear home that is really fully under your control, that is super valuable.
OK. And another thought is about mobile search. So I'm thinking maybe because a mobile user cannot install a Chrome extension on their phone, Google will automatically hide that store page from search results on mobile.
And I don't know. I would be surprised if we did that. But it might be something where if we could recognize that individual pages like this are completely irrelevant for mobile.
Or maybe Google has an algorithm that automatically intentionally hides all results that is a Chrome extension from mobile, because it knows that it doesn't work.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's easy to test. Like find a popular extension and search for it and see what happens on mobile.
OK. All right. Thanks very much.
All right, Wouter.
Hey, hello, John. Good morning.
Hi.
I have a small Search Console related question. So for reference, it's about a commerce website of 2,000 or 3,000 pages in total. And next to the product pages, it also contained a couple of course pages. Now, when these were developed, they were wrongly set to no index. This was fixed a couple of weeks or even a couple of months ago. But in Search Console, most of these pages, and we're really talking about only a handful of pages, like maybe 10 pages, but like 80% of these pages are still set to no indexed in Search Console. And I can see that the Googlebot last crawled it months ago, back in June. We fixed it in development, so it's been fixed for a couple of months. The no index meta tag is gone. Everything can be indexed. They are indexed in other search engines as well, so there's no technical issues really. But if we check Search Console, it still says, well, Googlebot last passed this page in June, and it still contains a no index tag, which isn't the case. So we tried to request the indexing via Search Console. We tried resubmitting sitemaps, but still we don't get these pages indexed. And I don't know if you have any ideas as to what might cause Googlebot not to listen to the indexing requests, or if there are any known issues in Search Console with indexing.
I don't think there are any known issues in that regard, but sometimes we're a little bit conservative with regards to submitting to indexing requests, which is probably partially what you're seeing there. I think there might be two things. Well, I guess a couple things. On the one hand, if we see that a page is no index for a longer period of time, then we usually slow down with crawling of that. So I think that's what you're seeing there. That also means that when the page becomes indexable again, we'll pick up crawling again. So it's essentially that one kind of push that you need to do. Another thing is that since Search Console reports on essentially the URLs that we know for the website, it might be that the picture looks worse than it actually is. That might be something that you could look at by, for example, looking in the performance report and filtering for that section of the website or those URL patterns to see if kind of that number of high no index pages in Search Console is basically reporting on pages that weren't really important, and the important pages from those sections are actually indexed. The other thing that you could do, I think the sitemap is essentially a good start, but another thing that you could do is make it clear with internal linking that these pages are very important for the website so that we crawl them a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. And that can be a temporary internal linking, where you say, like, for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, we link to individual products from our homepage, and we call it, I don't know, whatever section you want to call it, is like special products or whatever. Mm-hmm. And essentially, when we find that the internal linking has significantly changed, then usually we go off and double check those pages too. So that could be kind of like a temporary approach to pushing things into the index again. With internal linking, it's not that you're saying these are important pages across the web, but rather important pages relative to your website. So if you significantly change the internal linking, it can happen that other parts of the website that were maybe kind of like just barely indexed, that they drop out at some point. So that's why I would do that on a temporary level and kind of say, like, I want to push these back into the system so that they get recrawled at the regular rate. And then I'll change the internal linking back so that everything is more normal again.
OK, that's a good idea. So for example, a footer link as well, or adding the pages to the footer would be adding internal links.
I think that would work too. I think it's usually better if or best if we can find it on really important pages on the website, where we know, like, usually like on your homepage or something, where we can tell, okay, this is something, and you're saying that this is important for you. Therefore, we'll go double check that page.
Okay, and what do you think about rewriting the URLs for these pages? So having a new URL, a fresh URL, and submitting that via sitemap, would that speed up the process, or?
I don't know. I would guess it might for some, and it might not for others. So I think overall, I would try to keep the old URLs unless there's really a severe problem with the old URLs, and just kind of try to push them through that way. Changing the URLs is something where you lose any of the information that was associated with the old URL. And it's like the advantage is Google doesn't know that there was a no index there. But on the other hand, Google doesn't know anything about that page. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hit and miss if it actually changes anything for your situation.
OK. OK, thanks for the info.
Sure. All right, Jerome.
Hi, good morning, John. Good morning.
Hi.
So I don't have any problems yet regarding my question, so I'd just like to verify. I'm using a WordPress website, and I'm using two plugins. One is Yoast SEO, which automatically adds a href canonical link to every page. But I also use a translator called WPML, I think. And that one adds of every page an alternate href link. So my question is now that it doesn't make it logic that it says for that URL it's canonical, but it's also an alternate. Does that conflict somewhere in the crawler?
No. I mean, I don't know exactly what these two plugins do. So it's kind of just from an overall point of view, if you have a page that has a rel canonical on it, you're essentially with a canonical saying the link that is mentioned there is the preferred URL that I want. Yeah. And if it's the same page, then that's perfect, because then it kind of gives us confirmation that this page is the one that you want to have indexed. Mm-hmm. And the rel alternates basically mean there are alternate versions of this page as well. So with different languages, for example, if you have one page in, I don't know, English, one page in French, you would have the rel alternate link between those two language versions. And it's not saying that the page where that link is on is the alternate, but rather it's like these are two different versions, and one of them is in English, one of them is in French, and they can both be canonical. So having that combination is usually fine. The one place to watch out a little bit is that the canonical should not be across languages. So it shouldn't be that on your French page, you have a canonical set to the English version, because they're different pages, essentially.
Yeah.
But the French page can be canonical, and the English page can be canonical, and you have the alternate link between the two, and that's essentially a good set.
OK, so it can be canonical and alternate on the same page?
Yes.
OK. OK. Well, thanks for the verification.
Cool.
Thanks.
David.
Hey, John. Hey, everybody. I already got back to you last week with that question, or I asked you this question last week. It was about no indexing versus canonicalization, or robots TXT file blocking it there. So basically what's happening is, like, we have a website with an e-commerce store with a lot of product variations that have thin content, or duplicate content even sometimes. So I'm like, in this week, I made a list of all the URLs we want to keep or we want to have indexed, the best URLs that we have. And then I made a list of all the URLs that we have, but that we don't want to have indexed. So, and the more I worked on it, the more I asked this question to myself, canonicalization or no indexing? And still, like, it doesn't add up. I'm not sure what the better of those would be, even if it might sound like a simple question, but it's actually not. If you're about to no index the whole site, you better want to check again. So I don't see what would be better in that situation.
Yeah. I don't recall your exact situation, so it might be tricky. But I think the general question of should I use no index or rel canonical for another page is something where there probably isn't an absolute answer. So that's kind of just offhand. It's like, if you're struggling with that, you're not the only person who's like, oh, which one should I use? That also usually means that both of these options can be OK. So usually what I would look at there is what your really strong preference there is. And if the strong preference is you really don't want this content to be shown at all in search, then I would use no index. If your preference is more, I really want everything combined in one page, and if individual ones show up, like, whatever, but most of them should be combined, then I would use a rel canonical. And ultimately, the effect is similar in that, well, it's like likely the page that you're looking at won't be shown in search. But with a no index, it's definitely not shown. And with a rel canonical, it's more likely not shown.
OK. OK. Thank you. So just to confirm, the links, though, like if I change one link, no, forget it. forget this thought. That's all right. Thank you very much. You answered my question. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, you can also do both of them. And it's something, if external links, for example, are pointing at this page, then having both of them there kind of helps us to figure out, well, you don't want this page indexed, but you also specified another one. So maybe some of these signals we can just forward along.
OK. Thank you.
Sure. Hazel. Oh no, wrong button. Oh, she dropped out.
Hey, Dom, can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So I accidentally hung up my meeting. Sorry. The first question, one of my first question is that I don't know if you remember in our formal meeting, I mentioned that our crawl rate has dropped to dramatically over 90%, and we assume that it's because of our response time. And now, we have done many actions to improve our response time, and now the response time in the back end of the JSC has been restored to the formal level, around 1400 milliseconds to 500 milliseconds. Yeah, but the crawl request, also the crawl rate, is restoring much more slowly than the response time. I remember that you said if we fix our response time quickly, and the crawl rate will be restored in several days, right? So right now the crawl rate didn't restore like what we expected. So we are wondering why is that, and maybe is that because our response time isn't restored to maybe lower level or something like that? So we kind of hope that you can give us some advice on that.
Yeah. Do you know when the response rate has improved, or how long that has been?
The response time, what? The response time, several days. It's restored to like 500 milliseconds, several days, and now we couldn't see any improving, or the improving is much slower in the JSC.
Yeah, my guess is probably it just takes longer. So usually the system that we have is very responsive in slowing down to make sure that we don't cause problems, but is a little bit slower in ramping back up again. I suspect if it's been a few days that you improved that, then probably I would give it maybe a week or longer to catch up again. What you can also do in the Help Center in Search Console, we have a link to a form where you can request that someone from the Googlebot team takes a look at the crawling of your website, and you can give them information about this, especially if it's a larger website where we have a lot of URLs to crawl. You can tell them, like, we improved our crawl rate significantly. You can crawl again with, I don't know, 2 QPS or however crawl rate you think is appropriate. And the Googlebot team sometimes has time to take action on those and kind of adjust the crawl rate up manually if they see that there's actually the demand on Google's side, and they see that the site has changed in that regard. So that's sometimes a little bit faster than the automatic systems, but it's not guaranteed. I can look for the link later on, or it should be in the Help Center. I think it's called Report a Problem with Googlebot, or Report a Problem with Crawling, something like that. And it's a form where you specify the IP addresses of the Googlebot that you're seeing. And it's usually meant to report issues where Googlebot is crawling too much, but you can also report issues where Googlebot is not catching up with crawling yet?
That won't pass. We have already submitted the IP address and also the problem through that Googlebot system is, but we still didn't get any response from that.
Yeah, usually they don't respond. Usually they review these every now and then, and then they take action on them. So my guess is probably you just have to wait a little bit longer.
Okay, thank you. So as our response time has back to the formal level around 500 milliseconds, do you think maybe lower is better, or we should also?
I think 500 is pretty good. That's usually in the range where I suggest for crawling, and I think if you have a very large website with, I don't know, millions and millions of URLs, then having an even faster response time is useful. But for normally sized or even medium large websites, I think 500 milliseconds should be okay.
Okay, good. We are a big site, big e-commerce site with millions and millions of pages. Yeah.
Okay. Then probably faster is better.
Thank you. And we also spot that as our crawl request dropped and our index pages also dropped. We don't know why that. Is this because of the crawling rate dropped, or is there any other reasons that affect our indexed pages?
It shouldn't affect the indexing, because if we just recrawl pages less frequently, then we still keep them in the index. It's not that the pages expire after a certain time. So that would not be related to the crawl rate, unless the crawling were issues where we received a 404 instead of content. But if it's just slower, then that just means like we crawl less, but we don't remove things from the index just because we crawl less.
Okay, that's weird. So do you have any reasons that may cause the indexed pages dropped?
I mean there are lots of reasons why they could drop, but it's tricky to kind of say like this is what you should be looking for. The main thing that I see online with regards to index pages is more a matter of quality, that our systems kind of understand that the relevance or the quality of the website has gone down, and then because of that they decide to index less. For larger e-commerce sites, that feels like something that probably wouldn't happen like that, but it's really hard to say. If you want, you can send me the URL, and I can double check with the Googlebot team. At least let me just drop my email address here. I can't promise that I'll be able to respond directly to you, but I'm happy to pass it on to the team to kind of double check.
Okay, thank you. I will send the URL in our chat message.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, cool. And one more question is about mobile first indexing. We all know the mobile first indexing, and so we optimize our site accordingly. As for the configuration, Google Doc recommends two ways of doing it. The first is responsive web design, and second is dynamic serving. And because the first way is a little difficult for us to achieve it through our tech environment, so we use the second way. But we still see that nowadays there are still over 200,000 daily crawls towards our mobile domain. Is this normal thing to see?
Okay, so you used to have, I guess in that case, an MDOT or a mobile separate subdomain?
Yep, the mdoc, and then we redirect the mdoc to the main domain, and also we use the dynamic serving there.
Now, some amount of crawling like that is normal. It takes a very long time for our systems to completely stop crawling a domain, even after it's redirected. So I wouldn't see that as an issue.
So it takes a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Our systems have a very long memory for things like this sometimes. And if you move a site from one domain to another, or if you kind of make this mobile change with a subdomain, sometimes that takes years for the crawling to stop completely.
Okay, I see. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks. Let me go through some of the submitted questions, and I'll get back to all of the raised hands. So many raised hands. And we can see how far we can make it. Let's see. The first one is about a website that has a regional section that targets Latin America. And we use personalization to change some elements on a page to match the country specifics, like currency or hero image. There's one product, email marketing, that offers different features based on the market. This is how the vendor has set it up, and we can't do much about it. Through personalization, the page is basically 90% different from what Googlebot sees. We're not trying to be shady. It's just that this one product is different. The rest are the same. The site has one subdomain that targets Latin America and only one URL for this product. Would this be an issue? In practice, this shouldn't be an issue. However, what you need to keep in mind is that Google can only index what Googlebot sees. And since Google usually crawls from the US, that means whatever would be visible to users in the US, users without cookies, Googlebot crawls without cookies, whatever content would be visible there is what we would index and what your website would be findable for. So if there's something unique that you're only adding with personalization and you want your website to be found for that, then we wouldn't see that. However, if the content that is usually visible on the page is all you care about, and with personalization you tweak things and you change things in ways that are not critical to how you want to be seen in search, then that's perfectly fine. Another question about Latin American websites. We consolidated our LATAM markets, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, and so on, into one market. We also target Spain with a different folder. For hreflang, we have selected ESES for Spain and referenced the LATAM URLs for every Spanish-speaking market. So the same URL for ES-MX, etc. Google uses ES-419 to target the LATAM market, but this no longer seems to be supported. Is it OK the way that we did it, referencing one URL for multiple countries? It's perfectly fine the way that you have set it up. In fact, it's the way that we recommend doing it. So it's fine having one version for one country and another version for lots of other countries. Listing the individual countries is a perfect way to do this. With regards to ES-419, I think that's an error in our systems. So in particular, some of our marketing pages also use hreflang. And for whatever reason, sometimes we specify ES-419 for, I think, Latin American Spanish. And somehow, because it's in our systems internally, the hreflang links are set up for that as well. So basically, those links don't work. And if you're just copying our markup, then that's not going to work for you. I see this kind of mistake across a lot of websites where they have some internal country or region coding that they do for their content, and then they kind of map that automatically to hreflang as well. And if these are not valid country and region notification values there, then essentially those hreflang individual links are ignored. in practice, this means the other hreflang links continue to work, and it's just this one country link that doesn't work. So I wouldn't copy what large sites do unless you're sure that it's actually correct. And then I think Hazel's questions we went through. When you say improve the quality of your website, is this quality something that is quantifiable? Or is it simply a term used to determine how multiple algorithms look at your website? I don't think it's quantifiable in the sense that we have kind of like a quality score like you might have for ads. When it comes to web search. And we have lots of different algorithms that try to understand the quality of a website. So it's not just one number or anything like that. From time to time, I talk with the search quality team to see if there's some quality metric that we could show, for example, in Search Console. But it's super tricky because we could create a separate quality metrics to show in Search Console. But then that's not the quality metric that we actually use for search. So it's kind of almost like misleading. And if we were to show exactly the quality metric that we use, then on the one hand, that opens things up a little bit for abuse. And on the other hand, it makes it a lot harder for the teams internally to work on improving this metric. So that's kind of the tricky balance there. I don't know. At some point, maybe we'll still have some measure of quality in Search Console, though. Is there any relation or impact upon rankings for websites who have made normal HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and another one with PWA, just because one of our main competitors has recently adopted it, and we notice a huge jump in their rankings? So these are essentially different ways of making a website, and you can make a website with lots of different frameworks and formats, and for the most part, we see these as normal HTML pages. So if it's a JavaScript-based website, we will render it and then process it like a normal HTML page. If it's HTML already in the beginning, we can do that. The different frameworks and CMSs behind it, usually we basically ignore that and just say, well, here's an HTML page, and we can process it. So just the fact that one of your competitors has moved from one framework to another and has seen an improvement in search, that framework change, from my point of view, wouldn't be kind of responsible for that. But rather, maybe they have a newer website now together with that framework change. Maybe the newer website has different internal linking, different content internally, is significantly faster or significantly slower. Users really like it, or they did an, I don't know, marketing campaign together with the website launch. All of these things kind of play in there. And these are all things that are not limited to the framework that you're using. Then two questions on PageSpeed Insights. The lab data in Google Search, Google Speed Insight results are the same as Lighthouse results in my Chrome browser. Do they use the same formula? I don't know 100%, but they are done completely differently in the sense that if you use PageSpeed Insights, that is run on a data center somewhere with essentially emulated devices where we try to act like a normal computer, and we have restrictions in place that make it kind of like a little bit slower, normal internet connection, those kind of things. And in Lighthouse, it basically runs on your computer with your internet connection. And I think Lighthouse within Chrome also has some restrictions that it applies to make it a little bit look, I don't know, maybe a little bit slower than your computer might be able to do, just to make sure that it's comparable. But essentially, these run in completely different environments. And that's why you would often see different numbers there. If you test with PageSpeed Insights, you see one number. If you test in Lighthouse in your browser, you might see different numbers. If you test with other speed tools that run online, you might see different numbers. Also, the field data, the data that we actually use for search ranking that you see in Search Console, that can be also completely different numbers, just because your users might have, on average, a different kind of device or a different kind of internet connection. So I, even if the formulas are the same, kind of the whole environment around these systems is very different. And the second question is, if PageSpeed Insight, the online tool, is using our computers and network. No. Like I mentioned, the online tool runs online in a data center somewhere. Lighthouse runs locally on your computer. The main reason I think we have so many different options here is that websites have different needs with regards to understanding how speed works. And especially with things like Lighthouse that you can run locally, that means you can run them in your test environment. So you can set up a test website internally. You can make it public if you want. But essentially, you can test things before you put them on your live website. So that's one of the reasons why it's really important that you can try things out locally. Someone was arguing that bolding important parts in a paragraph can boost your SEO. Does it? I think this is something that comes up every now and then. I double checked before the session, actually. And Matt Cutts did a video, I think, in like 2012 or something around that, about bolding and strong on pages. So usually we do try to understand what the content is about on a web page, and we look at different things to try to figure out what is actually being emphasized here. And that includes things like headings on a page, but it also includes things like what is actually bolded or emphasized within the text on the page. So to some extent, that does have a little bit of extra value there in that it's a clearer sign that actually you think this page or this paragraph is about this topic here. And usually, that aligns with what we think the page is about anyway. So it doesn't change that much. The other thing is that this is, to a large extent, relative within the web page. So if you go off and say, well, I will just make my whole page bold, and then Google will think my page is the most important one, then by making everything bold, essentially nothing is bold, because it's all the same. Whereas if you take a handful of sentences or words within your full page where you say, this is really important for me, and you bold those, then it's a lot easier for us to say, well, here's a lot of text, and this is potentially one of the most important points of this page. And we can give that a little bit more value. And essentially, what that kind of goes into is everything around semantic HTML, where you're giving a little bit more meaning to a page by using the proper markup for the page. And from our point of view, that's good. It helps us to understand the page a little bit better. So if you want to kind of like simplify it to one word answer, does bolding important points on a paragraph help the SEO? Yes, it does. It does help us to better understand that paragraph or that page. Does Google crawler get confused when it sees a URL that has been canonicalized, but that URL has an hreflang alternate? I think we talked about this briefly before. We have an e-commerce site with over 3,500 products. And I see that all pages are linked to all other pages through the menu. How many menu links to different parts of the page are treated by, or how are menu links treated by search engines? Because obviously, I don't want to link from each page on my website to each page on my website. I don't think we do anything special for menu links. They're essentially normal links on a page. So from that point of view, I wouldn't say you have to do anything unique for the menu itself. There is, I think, some practical limit with regards to the number of links on a page that we can process. I don't know how high that is at the moment. I would imagine that's, I don't know, well over 10,000 links on a page. So if you're cross-linking 35,000 products on every page, then I could imagine that maybe you are kind of like over that limit of the number of links that we process for a page. If your website is still being indexed properly, then we can probably find all of those pages, but it gets really hard for us to understand the context of individual pages if you're saying every one of my 3,500 pages is related to every one of the other pages that I have on my website. So it usually makes more sense to provide some kind of hierarchical structure on the website where you're saying, like, this is my main categories, these are subcategories, and from there, link to the individual products, rather than to link between all 35,000 products.
May I say something? This question came from me, actually.
Sure, sure.
That's kind of, I don't know, I felt stupid even asking this question, but it's really like the menu is following us everywhere throughout the page, obviously. And I've never asked myself this question, actually, how is this treated? Because like if I use Screaming Frog and I see that we have the exact amount of in-links and out-links on every link and on every URL. So it's really, it has to come from the menu because otherwise we don't link, obviously, through like, that wouldn't make sense. We wouldn't do that. So like really the menu is there and it's linking kind of everywhere always.
I think it might be something where you could double check how the menu is implemented, depending on how it's set up. And if you're using things like JavaScript to load content when people navigate the menu, maybe that's fine. One thing you can do to check is just open one of these pages in the browser and use View Source, and then search for, I don't know, the link tag. So kind of like the Angular bracket and A, and just see how many references it brings up. And it, like the total number of links on a page is one thing, but you should kind of see, is it in the order of, I don't know, a couple hundred to 1,000, or is it really 35,000 links on every page? Because if it really is 35,000 page on every link, 35,000 links on every page, then I think from the page size, from the speed, all of that will be affected as well. And that's something where if you change to a structure that has more kind of this categorization, you will definitely see an improvement there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure. Let me see. Maybe we can switch to more live questions since we have so many people raising hands. Dorde. Probably mispronouncing your name. Sorry.
Yeah, it's George.
George. Hi, John. Okay.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering. We noticed a big problem with Google Discover on our website. In 2 days, traffic dropped by some 70%, and it dropped to a certain level and has been stable on that level for some time. So we're wondering if we did something wrong. Was it an update or something? Can you clarify as to what exactly happened since it's such a drastic drop?
Now, I don't know specifically with regards to your website, but I anecdotally get reports from a lot of people that Discover traffic is very either on or off, in the sense that there's very little kind of room in between, in that if our algorithms determine we're not going to show much content from this website in Discover at the moment, then basically all of that traffic disappears. And in the other way, it's the same thing, where if we do show something from Discover from your website in Discover, then suddenly you have that big rush of traffic again.
Yes, but, what I wanted to clarify, it's been stable for, I don't know, 3-4 months. And then in 2 days it drops and then stays on that level. So yeah. Could it be a technical error or something like that?
If it's a technical issue, then you would see that in web search as well, and you would see crawl issues showing up. So I don't have full insight into exactly what all happens in Discover, but usually the issues that I see people talking about are, on the one hand, quality issues, where maybe the quality of your website is not so good, and with regards to the individual policies that we have for Discover. So in particular for Discover, we have some policies that are different from web search and recommendations that are a bit different. with regards to, I think, like adult content, clickbaity content, things like that. That's all mentioned in the Help Center page that we have for Discover. Uh-huh. And sometimes I suspect, I imagine a lot of websites have a little bit of a mix of all of these kind of things. And I suspect sometimes our algorithms just find a little bit too much. And then they say, oh, like we have to be careful now with this website. So like, without knowing your website and without knowing the details of what exactly Discover is picking up there, that's kind of the direction I would head there. There are a number of SEOs externally that have looked into Discover a little bit more and tried to figure out like what kind of content performs well or which content shows up at all in Discover. And they've written a bunch of blog posts and done presentations on that. I would try to search for some of that and see what other people have found. Because from our point of view, Discover is something where we try to show a stream of information to people. And because of that, we tend not to have a lot of detailed information on what exactly you need to provide there to perform really well. So sometimes it makes sense to look at what other people have figured out.
Mm-hmm. OK, thanks. I was wondering also if you could point us to tell us if what would be a good response time for a news site, news media.
Yeah. So what do you mean with response time?
Well, a number. You mentioned that 500 milliseconds is a good response time, I think, in a last question. Is that OK for news sites as well, or should they be lower? Or?
Well, I mean, the response time is something that plays into our ability to figure out how much crawling a server can take. Mm-hmm. And usually the response time from a practical point of view limits or kind of plays into how many parallel connections would be required to crawl. Mm-hmm. So if we want to crawl, I don't know, 1,000 URLs from a website, then the response time to spread that out over a course of a day can be pretty large. Whereas if we want to crawl 1,000,000 URLs from a website and a high response time is there, then that means we end up with a lot of parallel connections to the server. And I think we have some limit there with regards to we don't want to cause issues on the server. So that's kind of why the response time is very directly connected with the crawl rate. For a news website, it's not so much a matter of is it news or not, but rather the amount of URLs that we need to crawl mm-hmm. per day. So that's for, I don't know, that's kind of the angle I would look at there. It can be that a news website, we crawl 10,000 pages a day, and those are the important news articles are all covered. It might be that we have to crawl millions of articles a day because we always have to refresh the archive or things like that. Then obviously the response time, the crawl rate looks different.
OK. And that's it. Thanks very much.
Sure. Prim.
Yeah, hi, John.
Hi.
So this guy, PWA questions, which is the normal tech stack, HTML, CSS, JS, and you know, the one of the, our competitor. Is, you know, adopting the PWA. So as you explained into that questions, might be there are the, you know, the minimize the elements of the web pages, internal linking structure are improved and all. Those are the factors could be a cause of the rankings into the SERP. But what the my intent behind that questions, you know, overall game is shifted toward the UI and UX, whatever the, you know, the happening to the user front. Whenever the websites are, you know, the open and or the rendering upon the browser, so when we are the seeing upon the, you know, our website is the product website and it's a very old website. You can say the 10 to 15 years ago website. It's launched into the 2005-06. Like a lot of the complex tech environment, you know, the stack structure, back end, front end, a lot of. So when we are to notice our competitor adopted the PWA from the last 3-4 months, and obviously they have the minimized the some of their HTML elements of their front pages and some of the internal linking structure as well. So just we are the wondering, is it the possible, you know, the region to be, because obviously PWA giving the user the best user experience in compare of the normal websites, if I'm thinking into the right direction. So what could be, you know, the possible factor, and how we can, you know, the, is it fine to go with the PWA or maintaining the our current tech stack? Thanks for you.
Yeah. So I think the question is kind of like, you have an older website and your competitor just moved to a PWA, and then yes, like everything is better for them. Should we also move to a PWA?
Yeah. That's a big decision for the management point of view also.
Yeah, I don't think there is one absolute answer there. So I think on the one hand, with a PWA, if it's a pure JavaScript based website, then you have some challenges there that are on top of just the normal website. And that's everything around JavaScript-based websites and making sure that they render well for search. That can be a lot of work, and that can cause a lot of problems. So by default, saying going to a PWA will make your rankings better, I don't think that is the case. Okay. It can improve your rankings if you make a better website. But you also have a lot of other things that you need to think about. So it's something where essentially, from my point of view, it's more of, well, is going to a new website going to improve my rankings? And my guess is if your website is really 10, 15 years old and has kind of grown organically since then, probably yes. Probably yes. Like moving to any kind of a newer framework and a cleaner website, a faster website, one that works better for users, probably after 10, 15 years, you will see changes in ranking. Okay. And that doesn't have to be a PWA. Maybe even going to a PWA adds so much extra work that it's not worthwhile for you. Maybe it is worthwhile. I think one of the advantages of a PWA is also that you have some almost like mobile app related elements that are kind of available by default, which could be like installing on the home screen, maybe some offline functionality. And depending on your market, maybe that's really valuable. So that might be something that says, well, it's extra work to make a JavaScript-based website work in search, but we don't have to create a separate app, or we have all of these extra features as well, and it's worthwhile from a financial point of view to do that. But that's something where almost like the SEO aspect is secondary almost. But especially if you have a large old website that's 10, 15 years old, moving to something new, I'm almost certain that you will see significant changes, just because it'll be a lot cleaner, it'll be a lot faster, the structure will be a lot better, it'll be better for users, it'll be easier for search engines to understand, all of that kind of all of the HTML improvements that have happened since then, they play in your favor.
All right. So what I'm getting from your explanation, I got the 2 points. First point, PWA is not directly relates with the SERP and somehow the ranking factor. And second point, you are telling, obviously, your old product website need to be, you know, the updated with the latest tech stack, which is going to be helpful for the cleaning of overall structure and, you know, the HTML elements, which is rendering on the front. Is it fine?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that all websites have to be the most modern HTML, but if a website has kind of lingered on for the past 10 years, you've kind of missed out on a lot of improvements that have happened across the way.
Got it. Thank you very much. I'm going to my management to put your thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, good luck. Cool. Okay, let me take a break here with the recording, and I'll get back to more of your questions afterwards as well. It looks like lots of people still have their hands up. Wow, so good. Okay. If you're watching this on YouTube, thanks for sticking around to the end. If you'd like to join one of these in the future, feel free to watch out for the link. We post them in the community section on the channel. And yeah, thanks for joining.